What's going on, church? Good morning. It is good to be here. Like Alicia said, my name is Nathan. If it's your first time here, welcome. We know you could be anywhere else, but we realize you're here, and we believe that's for a reason. And if you're here for the 1,000th time, we also believe that there is a reason for that. So welcome. We're in a series called Soundtracks, roughly based off a book called Soundtracks by John Acuff. How many of you ordered that book this week? Some of y'all. Some of you did. Awesome. Hopefully it's good. But we're looking at our thoughts, and we're looking at how our thoughts matter and why they matter, especially in regards to our faith, but actually just outside of our faith, but the direction of our lives. But I want to start with a question. Here's a question. It's a big question. What kind of person do you want to be? What kind of person do you want to be? Like when your friends are talking about you behind your back, because listen, we all talk about people behind their back, right? What do you want them to say? When your kids grow up one day and they're telling, or they go to college or go to the workforce and they're telling about their parents, what do you want them to say about you? Your coworkers, what do you want them to say about you? When people look at you, what kind of person do you want to be? What kind of person? That's a big question, and we all have some version of us in our mind. Like, hey, I want to be that person when it's all said and over. I want people to remember this about me. I want them to say this. And I heard someone say this one time. What if just collectively, as Christians, collectively as a church, we just kind of used an umbrella phrase and said, you know what? As a church, as individuals, we want to be an uncommon person. And some of you are like, hey, I can do that. Because you're weird. Like, I can be uncommon, right? I can be different. But here's what I'm talking about. Uncommon in the sense of unprecedented. Now, I vote to retire that word after 2020. But unprecedented, extraordinary, or how about this? Different than the world around us. I love it. Uncommon. Because I believe that as followers of Jesus, we're called to be uncommon. We're called to be extraordinary. We're called to live different than the world around us. And what if we woke up every day and we said, okay, here's how the world reacts to the situation, but what if I chose to be uncommon? What if we woke up every day and asked this question? What would an uncommon person do? What would an uncommon person do when they're sitting across, you know, and they're looking in the eyeballs of someone that totally disagrees with them, that is rude to them, that doesn't like them? How would an uncommon person react? What would they do? What would an uncommon person do with parenting? How would an uncommon person act in their marriage? How would an uncommon person act when they're stuck in traffic going way too slow? What would an uncommon person do? And so this week, I've been trying to figure this out. What would an uncommon person do? I knew I was going to ask you this question. I knew I was going to talk about this. So all week, I've been trying to do what an uncommon person would do. And can I tell you, it is hard. You know why? I was doing really good until I met people, right? I was doing really good. Then I started interacting with people. Like, what do you do? What would an uncommon person do when you're stuck and people are driving way too slow? And though the line says you can pass, you've never seen anybody pass on that road in town. Like, can I actually pass, or can I just stick? Do I have to just be calm behind them? What would an uncommon person do when I'm interacting with my wife, when we disagree? What would an uncommon person do when Natalie wants to watch nothing but Miss Rachel? And like, dude, Dad can't take it anymore. Dad's gonna lose his mind. What would an uncommon person do? And what I found is I knew what an uncommon person would do, and it wasn't what I was about to do. But what if we as a church and as individuals who follow Jesus said, hey, you know what? We're gonna live uncommon. And now you may be asking, well, why does this even matter? Well, that's a great question. Why does this matter? And here's why it matters. Because I believe that we're called to live uncommon. Matter of fact, we say it this way, that we're helping people find Jesus and live like him. And living like Jesus looks opposite of the way of the world. It looks opposite of often what we want to do. But we also understand that when we follow Jesus, when we make Jesus Lord of our life, there's some certain things we believe. And so we believe that how we live actually matters. We believe that our life actually matters. We believe we're called to treat other people like they matter, that we're to love God and we're to love others, even at times when we disagree. We're still called to love, so we're called to live like that. But we're also called to live set apart. And we believe that God does care how we live. And we believe that every day, at the end of our lives, everybody spends eternity somewhere. We believe that God loved us so much that he sent Jesus to die for us. We believe that he has certain ways that we're to live. And we believe one day when we do die, when we're at the end of our lives, we will give an account for all the things we do. And you're like, man, I didn't even know I believed that. But like, yeah, that's what we believe. But we also believe at the very core of all those beliefs that it leads us to live this uncommon life. And here's what we believe. We believe following Jesus in an uncommon way and living an uncommon life actually brings you and brings me into our best possible life. And it sounds weird, but it's the best possible life for us. But we also understand that to get to this uncommon life for so many people, where it starts is in their thoughts. And that's why we're doing this series. Because our thoughts matter. And Soundtracks is all about the thoughts, the strongest thoughts that play in our mind. The 10, the 15, the 20 strongest thoughts in our life. And what we know is these thoughts are guiding us. So in the book, they call Soundtracks this, the reoccurring thoughts. So those things, what are the reoccurring thoughts in your life? What are the things that you keep thinking about that have effect on the way we see ourselves, how we see ourselves, how we live out our insecurities, how we live out our self-worth and the world around us. So our soundtracks are really the thoughts of our life, and our thoughts are the soundtracks of our lives. And we know, not because John Acuff says it, but because the Bible says it, for as he thinks, everybody say thanks, as he thinks in his heart. So as we think, so is he. As we think, as we're living out, as we're having thoughts, they're guiding our life and they're directing our lives. And you know this, but you can sit down and you can look at your thoughts right now, and you can look at who you are right now and where your life has led you. And you can look it back and say, man, before I ever did anything else, I thought this, and that thought led me to this, and this, and this. And you are a sum total of your thoughts and what you've believed, and they've brought you this moment. And we believe that our thoughts are too important to just casually think about them. So this series is about being not reactive, but proactive to our thoughts. And so we're following this verse where Paul says, take captive every thought. We want to think about what we think about. We want to capture these thoughts. We want to capture these thoughts. Why? To make them obedient to Christ so we can live that uncommon life. And here's the power of your thoughts. And you may never even realize this, but what psychology tells us and what science tells us is that our thoughts happen. And we said last week, if you weren't here, like every bad decision you ever made, first you told yourself it was a good decision in your mind, right? Like you believed it. So our thoughts lead to beliefs. What do beliefs do? They start to shape our identities. What do all three of these do? They lead to what? They lead to action. And so that you see that your life is starting to be shaped by the action you take, and your actions you take first start as something you're thinking. It's crazy. So what we want to do in this series, and really I'm encouraging us to do over the next 3 weeks, is like just think about what you think about. Think about the thoughts in your head and where are your thoughts leading you. And then I want to share what John said in this book. He says, every thought we have should go through a thought funnel. Is it true? Is it helpful? And is it kind? So I want to talk about that. Is it true? Is it true? You know, our mind has this amazing ability to convince us that everything we think is true, right? All the opinions we have are true. And even though our mind has lied to us many times, and what do things like anxiety or fear or depression or insecurity do? They force us at times or cause us to believe something that's not true. So we got to think, is it true? Because if it's not true, you got to move on from it. And then is it helpful? Is it helpful? Is it helping me move towards the life that I want? Is it helping me move towards the life that God is calling me to? Is it helping me become uncommon? Is it helpful in my journey? Is this thought that I'm thinking that's going to lead to an action, is it going to be helpful to what I need to do in my life? Is it getting in the way, or is it helpful? So is it true? Is it helpful? And then the last one I didn't quite understand, but he said, is it kind? I'm like, dude, is it kind? I don't even know if I'm always kind. Are my thoughts kind? I don't know. Then I started thinking and reading what he said. It's kind of like this. You ever have thoughts about yourself in your mind? And they're not always good thoughts, right? You're like, you think these negative thoughts about yourself. Imagine someone came up to you and they said to you what you were thinking about you. Now, if you would punch them if they said that, then it's not a kind thought, right? Like, yeah, if you think you're ugly in your mind, but someone else comes up to you and say, man, you are so ugly, you're not going to like that. Or they talk to you about all the negative things you say to yourself. Is it kind? Because if it's not kind, it's not helpful, it's not true, it's not helping you become this uncommon person, it's not guiding you. Now, sometimes in this kind part, like, you can realize, like, man, I messed up. Man, I need to change this action. I need to change this thought because it's not helpful, but you got to be kind. And the reason I say that is like, listen, you know, when Jesus interacted with people, did he shame people? He's like, no. You can't shame them to change them. You can't do that. He led them to truth. And so shame isn't a great motivator in life. None of you change your opinions because of shame very often. And so we shouldn't try to shame ourselves in our mind. Now we can realize it's wrong. I got to change my line of thinking. That's where this series is coming in to play, because we're not just changing our soundtracks or stopping these soundtracks. We're replacing them with something new. So we're going to look at a soundtrack today that's going to be something that all of us struggle with. We may not always talk about it outright, and it's going to be really, really common, but I want to give you a little preview next week. Next week, we're going to look at the soundtrack of worry. We're going to look at the soundtrack of anxiety. So if you know someone who struggles with that, if you struggle with that, next week you want to be here. But the soundtrack we're going to look at today is the soundtrack of fear. Everybody say fear. Fear. Everybody has fear in some capacity. And how I know that is we have sayings about fear. Right? And so let me share some with you. Have you ever heard this? Like, hey, man, that kid's got guts or grit as a coach. Like, that's how he's saying, like, he's on, or he or she is not fearful. Like, they got guts, man. They're gritty out there. Or have you ever heard this? Like, hey, in this family, we don't wimp out. And usually that wimp out is with another word that you can't say in church, right? Like, you know, your family has these sayings, or, hey, you know, suck it up, buttercup. Anybody ever say that, right? You know, pull up your bootstraps or whatever, like whatever that means. I don't even wear boots, bro, so nice try. Or what do they say today? I don't know. Kids, what do you say today? Teenagers, slay, queen, slay. I don't know, slay. Like, we're slaying. I don't know. What do we say? But growing up, you know what we did? We wore the No Fear. Anybody remember the No Fear brand with the hats and the shirts, and like, dude, you put that on and like you turn into another person. I had a lot of fears, but man, when I put that hat on, turn it backwards, it was time to roll. No fear. And because no one wakes up one day and they're like, hey, you know what? When people look at my life, I just want them to think I'm such a coward. Like, I'm going to love that someday. On the tombstone, they were a coward. Like, I want that in my life. No one says, I want to be fearful. Yet, many of us struggle with fear. How do I know? Because I ask you to repeat a word in church. Most of you can't even do it. You're scared. That's what I think, right? And here's the other thing. I've met people who are fearful. I've met people who are paralyzed by fear. And you know what? They're like, hey, Nathan, I know what 2 Timothy says, where it says, for the Spirit of God does not make us timid. It's like, it doesn't make us timid, but gives us power, love, and self-discipline. And we're like, we know it. And we even know Psalm 23. It's like, even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will what? Fear no evil, for you are with me. I know it. You know it. And like, I wake up every day and I know those verses and I play in my head. I write them in my mirror. I got them on my phone. I got them on the Bible app. But you know what? I wake up and I'm still fearful. My no fear hat is not working. And it's like this. We want the soundtrack to faith to play. We want it to play. We know what it says. But the soundtrack to fear, it just won't turn off. I just can't get it to turn off. I just can't. I want you so desperately, but I don't know how. And then it kind of goes down this progression. Then we start to convince ourselves, man, if I was just braver, if I was just stronger, if I was just tougher, and then I could shut off the soundtrack of fear. Now, there are certain things like phobias. So this week I learned there's like a gazillion phobias. Anybody scared of heights? Heights in here, right? Anybody scared of... there's cotton balls. Anybody scared of cotton balls? Don't raise your hand. I don't want to make fun of you, right? I'm not making fun of you. I just found that some people are scared to swim, or that there's that fear like when you go in the ocean and like it's just this kind of this fearful because you don't know what's at the bottom. Like, does anybody like swimming in water where you can't touch the bottom? Like, what's down there? Like, it's freaky, right? People have that. And sometimes, you know, you got fears of like roller coasters. Like, if I was going to Indiana Beach, I might be a little scared of some of those. But anyways, right? But you're like, hey, if I was just braver, stronger, or tougher, and some of those things work. But you know this. Come on, we can be honest. You know, for so many instances in your life, the fear we're really talking about today, not the phobias, but the real fear that paralyzes us. You're like, I tried to be braver. And I've tried to be stronger. And I've tried to be tougher. But Nathan, I can't shut it off. It's like the fear of not measuring up. You ever have that fear? Like, will I ever be good enough? Will I ever be the type of dad or mom I need to be? Will I ever, ever be the type of spouse that my spouse deserves? Am I ever going to be able to make my parents proud, my dad proud, my mom proud? Am I going to measure up? The fear of insecurity, we've talked about that a lot. The fear that I'm never going to be able to overcome what I'm going through. You talk to people who struggle with addiction, they're like, hey, I have the fear, am I really going to be able to do this? Am I really going to be able to 3, 4, 5 years from now, am I going to be able to defeat this substance? Am I going to be able to do it? And the fears that we hate because we know they paralyze us, they stop us in our tracks, and we're like, hey, I know the verses, and I just don't know what I'm going to do. It's that fear we're talking about, the crippling fear that we all have in some capacity. And you know this, like, it's not a matter of fact of being braver, stronger, or tougher. say, I need to learn to change those pathways in my mind. I need to learn to replace those so I stop having these emotions that are holding me back. So I started doing a deep dive this week in my on fear, and lucky for me, I got a mental health therapist that lives in my house, so she tries to explain it to me. It's way over my head, and then I read some books and articles, and here's what we found. That fear is just an emotion. And we're like, duh. But this, all emotions are trying to tell us something. All emotions. Every emotion you can think of is trying to tell you something. Inside Out, the movie, does it really, really well, right? All your emotions are data, and they're collecting data. So you got to say, hey, what is this emotion trying to tell me? I'm fearful. Why? Why am I fearful? Is it true? Is this fear true? Is it something to be afraid of? Is it really validated? Is it really a good thing to be fearful? If I'm fearful with this, is it helpful? Is it kind? They're all emotions, and emotions are trying to tell us something. It's like a radar going off, or a alarm going off in our life. Like, hey, something's going on. Why am I feeling this way? And then I found out this: emotions love themselves. You ever wonder why when you're sad, it's so much easier to look at the world and be sad? Because emotions love themselves. They're trying to create pathways in your mind that make you sad. So when you're sad or depressed, there's 1,000 reasons that convince you to be sad or depressed. When you're angry, like, it doesn't take much, does it? But there's 1,000 things to be angry at, right? You can start being angry at one thing, and before you know it, you're angry at the entire world. And when you're fearful, fear loves itself so much, it's trying to convince you something, that this situation you should be afraid of. You should be afraid of that. You should live life of fearful of this emotion. You should live life thinking you're never going to measure up. Like, it's trying to convince you of what it's that what you're feeling is real and valid. And the longer you look at it, the longer you sit and look at it, the easier it is to feel that emotion. That's how emotions work. It's kind of think of it this way. About a week ago, I was outside before the air quality here got like apocalyptic. Like, I don't know what's going on in Logansport, guys. Like, this is crazy. Y'all told me, like, hey, it's still Indiana. Well, I'm southeast Indiana. We never had to deal anything with that, right? Anyways, okay. So the weather, we're sitting outside, and Natalie likes to go outside, and she likes to swim. We kind of redneck swim because daddy's a preacher and he don't got money for a pool. So we got one of those little plastic pools and a little water table and one of those infinity chairs. And she sits in there and she splashes. And we got our 90s country music bumping, right? And we're loving life, living life. I'm roasting like a turkey because I can't fit in the pool. Only she's doing good. And I was sitting there, I was looking in my chair. I don't know why, but I started looking up at the clouds. Anybody ever done that before? You like look at the clouds? Right? And then all of a sudden, you stare at them long enough, and my mind at least starts to convince me, like, oh man, I'm seeing that spaceship from Star Wars. I don't watch Star Wars. I don't know what it's called, but that looks like a spaceship from Star Wars. Like, hey, that person looks like a dog chasing a stick. Like, your mind just starts convincing you all these clouds start to look like something, right? And you just sit there. It's like crazy. Like, and the longer you do it, the more you convince yourself, like, I'm seeing something. And they're just white blobs of nothing, but you're seeing something. And it's like guys smacked me across the head and say, dude, that's what I've been trying to tell you about emotions. That the longer you let those emotions sit there, the longer they're going to start to convince you of something that's true, that something's true that when it's not true. It's going to help you become more fearful, more sad, more anxious, because the emotions love themselves. And they love themselves so much, they're trying to convince us to do what they want us to do. And often emotions want us to do the opposite of what's actually good for us. So for example, they say sadness. With sadness, you should go talk to somebody. You should be around somebody. You should do something that makes you happy. But when you're sad or depressed, what you want to do is you want to withdraw, because your emotion wants you to feel what it wants you to feel. When you're angry, instead of lashing out, that's what you want to do, right? When you're angry, you lash out. Anger wants you to lash out, but really what you should do, what's good for you, is you should just take a step back and calm down, but it wants you to react, right? Or fear or anxiety, what they want you to do is they want you to withdraw, and they want you to sit in that fear. They want you to sit in that anxiety, when what you should be doing is taking steps to overcome that anxiety and fear. So our mind operates like that. So you have to understand that, and I have to understand that. We have to understand, like, sometimes we can't help it. In some of our minds, we need to take medicine. Sometimes we need to go to counselor. But our emotions are doing this to us. So we have to realize that. We got to realize with fear, it's the same way. And then we have to ask ourselves, what would an uncommon person do? But then we got to flip it around. What would someone who wasn't stuck on a soundtrack of fear do? What would someone who was a little bit more faithful than me do in this situation? What would someone who wasn't quite as fearful do when this happens? How would someone who wasn't quite as fearful parent? How would they handle the situation? How would they do this? Because you know, fear motivates us and it drives us, it often drives us to do the things we don't want to do. So what I want to look at today, and this is why I love the Bible. Listen, the Bible's so cool. And we think it's just this ancient book that doesn't matter. It matters. It's so relevant that there's illustrations and there's examples of the Bible of people who thousands of years ago struggled with the very same thing we did. There's a man named Gideon. Everybody say Gideon. Gideon. Gideon was a judge, and I've said this before, but Judges is this weird time in the Bible. It's a transition period. It's after the Promised Land and after Egypt, but before the first king, Saul. And so God will raise up these kind of rulers or authority, and they're called judges. And Gideon was, for the most part, actually one of the better judges. He has really good parts of his story. Now, he's still imperfect because the point of Judges is to show you, hey, listen, none of these judges or any of these kings or any of these rulers throughout the Old Testament will ultimately save you. That's what Jesus is for. But Gideon, for the most part, he does pretty good. And Gideon comes onto the scene in Judges chapter 6, and it's an interesting kind of thing that's going on. The Israelites are God's chosen people, and they're not listening to God. They're disobeying God, and God's like, listen, you want to disobey? There's got to be consequences, because there's always consequences, but here, go ahead and do it. Do your own thing, right? The kind of the theme of Judges is everybody did what was right in their own eye, and so they're living life, and things aren't going good. They have an enemy called the Mennonites, and the Mennonites, they're kind of jerks. They're big boys on the block, and every harvest, when the Israelites would try to harvest their crops, the Mennonites would come in, kind of steal their stuff and go home and do it again over and over again. If you need me to simplify it, you remember the movie Bug's Life when the grasshoppers came in, those ugly grasshoppers, and they tried to steal all the ants' foods? That food, that is exactly what's going on in Judges 6. So this is what happens. They come to the Israelites are like, hey, we don't know what to do. They're reduced to starvation by the Mennonites. Then the Israelites cried out to the Lord for help. They're desperate and they don't know what else to do, so they turn to God. And they know when you turn to God, God is always answered. And that God answers their ancestors and he'll answer us, that when we need God, we can turn to God. He's there. And then a couple verses later, we're introduced. Someone's iPhone wants to get on the TV here. All right. They're introduced to Gideon, and it says this: Gideon, son of Joash, was threshing wheat at the bottom of a wine press to hide the grain from the Mennonites. So that phrase, like that little line, we would usually skip that. Like, he's threshing wheat at the bottom of a wine press, and usually we would just skip that, right? We're like, what does that mean? But this is where the Bible's so cool. You got to go under the surface, underneath what's actually going on. Why does this detail matter? Like, I don't thresh wheat. Does anybody in here thresh wheat? I didn't think so, right? So like, what does that mean? Why is the author telling us this? Well, we got to understand. So we got to start looking at the context, not the American context, but the actual context of going on. And so there was something called wheat threshing. Now, this is an illustration, because if you didn't know, they didn't have iPhones to take pictures back then. This was thousands of years ago, right? And so this is an illustration of what threshing wheat would look like. And so they would have some wheat here, and there'd be a big dude with a tool here, and he would pick up the wheat and he would throw it in the air. And they often would do it in open field, and they would throw it up, and all the light stuff would be taken away, and all the heavy stuff that you need would fall back to the ground, and so it would be called threshing wheat. I've never done it, nor will I ever do it, but it was something that they had to do for survival and life. So they would do that. Well, when we come to Judges 6, that's what Gideon is doing. But what's interesting is often it was done above ground with wind. Where is he doing it at? He's doing it in a wine press. Now, here's, for example, this is what a wine press would look like. It would be a hole in the ground. It's very difficult to thresh wheat in a hole in the ground where there is no wind. But he's doing it. And do you know why he's doing it? Because he was afraid of the Mennonites. All of a sudden, you start to connect what's going on here. And I think that's a perfect illustration, maybe where some of us are today with fear. Because here's what fear does. The soundtrack of fear has led you to a place you didn't want to be. When you make decisions out of fear, when you make choices out of fear, when you have fearful thoughts, it leads you to a place you don't want to be. And often leads you to do something, because thoughts lead to action, to do something you didn't want to do. So here's Gideon, one of God's chosen people, who God has called these Israelites to have this amazing journey, amazing story. And here he is living in a hole, threshing wheat in a hole, hiding from his enemy. And then we're introduced to a messenger of the Lord. It says, the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, get this, he says, mighty hero, the Lord is with you. And Gideon's looking around like, hey, mighty hero? Bro, I'm in a hole threshing wheat in a wine press hiding. You saying I'm a mighty hero? Look at me. What, man, did your GPS, did your Waze app get lost? Like, are you looking for somebody else? Because mighty hero, that's not what I am. Maybe right now, your soundtrack of fear is going off. You know God's calling you to something, or God's calling you to be uncommon. You're like, Nathan, dude, if you just knew me, if you just knew my life, if you just knew my story, if you just knew my faults, man, you know, I don't remember the last time I even read my Bible. I don't remember the last time I prayed. I don't remember the last time I even took an act of faith. You call me to be uncommon? That's where Gideon is. And it says this, the Lord is with you. That's an important line here. And Gideon says, no offense, but if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? You ever think that? Hey, God, where are you? If you love me, where are you? Why aren't you moving? Why has all this happened to us? Where are all the miracles our ancestors told us about? Again, this is a soundtrack to fear talking, right? Like, hey, if God's with me, why is all these bad things happening? Didn't they say the Lord brought us out of Egypt? But now what's happened? The Lord has abandoned us. Now he doesn't realize that his actions have actually abandoned God and handed us over to the Midianites. Gideon's like, listen, the Lord is with me? Is that supposed to help me? It's a soundtrack to fear. He's with me? If he was with me, do you think I'd be in this hole right now? If he was with us, do you think this would be happening? The Lord's not with me. And he continues. Then the Lord turned to him and said, go with strength. You have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. Am I not sending you? So Gideon's focused on himself. God's focused on himself. He's like, am I not sending you? And this is where Gideon's like, oh, all right, he should get his no fear shirt on. He should turn his hat on backwards. He should be ready to go. He should be gearing up. Because he's like, God's like, am I not the one sending you? But Gideon's like, hey, listen. What does Gideon do? He takes his eyes off God and puts it back on himself. He says, how can I rescue Israel? How can I do it? Because fear tells us I can't do it. It gives me all the reasons I can't. That's why the soundtrack to fear is so dangerous. I'm not good enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not brave enough. I'm not talented enough. I'm not whatever enough. I can't. And here's why I can't. Because I'm the weakest in my whole tribe. And my tribe is the weakest of all the tribes. And I'm the least in my own family. He's like, I'm the weakest of the weak. How can I do this? How can I? The soundtrack of fear is loud. And God says it again. The Lord said to him, listen, I will be with you. And you, because of me being with you, you will destroy the Midianites as if you were fighting against one man. He's like, Gideon, stop talking for 5 seconds. Listen, open your eyes and open your ears to what I have to say. And sometimes in life, isn't that what we need? Like, sometimes we just need to open our eyes and ears. I always say with this example, it doesn't really fit, but I'm going to share it anyways. I think back to when I first started dating Whitney. Whitney loves coffee. Now, back then, coffee wasn't, you didn't have to take out a loan to get coffee at Starbucks. Now you do. But back then, you didn't have to, right? And so I didn't know much about coffee. I didn't like coffee. She said, hey, look, yo, bro, I got to show you this coffee. She said, hey, there's something called white mocha. I'm like, what? White mocha? And you can get it iced? I mean, it was life-changing, right? There's white mochas. There's lattes. There's caramel macchiatos. Like, you got to speak French to even say that, right? There's cold brews. There's nitro cold brews. My eyes were open to a brand new world. I spend way too much money on coffee. And God's like, Gideon, open your eyes to this brand new world. He's like, listen, I hear all the reasons you can't. But are you listening to me? Are you going to listen to the soundtrack of fear? Same question for you. Are you going to listen to the soundtrack of fear? Or are you going to listen to what God has to say? Gideon, are you going to listen to me? I told you, I'll be with you. I told you, when you go out there in my strength, you're going to have victory. But you don't listen. Maybe right now, here's what we got to, our eyes got to be open and say, hey, are you going to listen to the soundtrack of fear? Or are you going to replace it with what God has to say? And here's what God tells us to replace it with. Replace the soundtrack of fear with the soundtrack, I am with you. That's what he's trying to get Gideon to do. And he's like, Gideon, just change your way of thinking. I'm with you. Don't listen to the fear. I know all the reasons to be afraid, but I'll be with you. He's like, I'm asking you to believe. That's why it's so important. I'm asking you to believe. Thoughts are so important because thoughts lead to beliefs and identities. They lead to action. So I'm asking you to believe Believe it when I tell you that I'm with you. I want you to live your life, Gideon, confident as you go out into this battle, I'm with you. God's saying the same thing. Hey, as you go out in your life, as you go into situations that make you fearful, I want you to be confident that I'm going with you. You're not going alone. So Gideon needs some convincing. I wish I could tell you that Gideon just gets right to it. He's like, awesome, let's go. He needs some convincing so he can go home and read Judges chapter 6 through 8, and there's some signs. But eventually, we kind of see something change. Gideon takes 10 friends, and they go attack some statues of false gods the Midianites believed in. It says, from then on, Gideon was called Jerubbaal, meaning he was the booty kicker of the Baal false gods. That's rough translation, Pelahowski version, right? But Baal kicker, let Baal defend himself. So what that means is you see Gideon here just getting this confidence to attack the Midianites' false gods. Later, Gideon is told to take some men. He takes his army out, and he's going to fight the Midianites. God's like, hey, listen, you got too many men. He says, bring them down to 300. Brings them down to 300. God works his magic, and 300 men with Gideon wipe out the Midianites. You're like, what does that have to do with me? It's a crazy story. It's awesome. And Gideon becomes this judge that we look at today. Well, I like Gideon because it shows us the shift of fear. And so we got to replace our soundtracks of fear. And so we've said this before, but we're going to say it again. We're going to change the soundtrack to fear and replace it with the soundtrack to step out and find out soundtrack. Because when I look at Gideon's story, I look at me. I look at you. And I think, man, there's so many of us who relate to that. We know that God has this calling for our lives right in front of us. He's calling us to be uncommon. Yet I'm still scared. What Gideon had to eventually come to the point was like, I got to step out. I got to take this step. And I got to find out in faith what God's going to do. He's like, I got to turn that volume down. And I got to step out to find out. And it's hard. And it's hard. But maybe right now, what you need more than anything else, some of you think you need more knowledge. Some of you think you need more to get your life back on track. Some of you think you need some other things. Maybe most of all, what you need right now to be uncommon, to step in this life that God has for you, is to step out and find out what God wants to do. Step out of that relationship. Step out of that insecurity. Step out of the addiction. Step out of the old way of living. And this is hard. I think back to roughly a year ago in my life, and I've shared this, most of my life was lived like this. I'm just like praying to God, like, God, I don't know what to do. I'm in this place of, I've always lived with my wife. I'm at this church, the only church I've ever been at. I don't want to leave, but it's becoming abundantly clear it's time to leave. And God, I don't even know if I want to do this anymore. I don't even know if I want to preach. I don't know if I want to teach. I don't know if I want to work in church. God, I'd be happy going work at Best Buy right now, God. Like, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know anything about TVs, but I'll go work at Best Buy. Like, God, I don't know what to do. And it was abundantly clear, hey, it's time to leave. Time to leave. Time to leave. And God was saying, hey, you got to step out. And he took me on this journey all across all these places, talked to all these people. And I didn't want to leave. I'm like, no, God, like, this is what I want to be. This is where you called me. This is what I want to do. He's like, no. He's just whispering, step out. Step out. Step out. And I wish I could tell you that I came running out, right? I just came sprinting to Logansport, Indiana, right? But man, I had to be drugged. I had to be dragged. God dragged me at times. I resisted. I kicked. I screamed, right? I did everything I could at times. But eventually, I just had to say, God, okay, this is where you're calling me. I'll step out. And I'm not sharing this to brag about me. I'm sharing this to tell you this is what happens in life. I stepped out. For the first time in a long time. And I was depressed. I didn't know what to do. I was anxious all the time. I was not who I was. For the first time, I came here. Started preaching here. And it's changed my life. I like it here. You guys may not like me, but I like it here, so I'm sticking around. But I had to step out to find out what God has for me. It's one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life. And you don't know how long seasons go, but you just gotta follow God. And my prayer for you is that you just step out and find out. It's scary sometimes. And you know, faith, I heard this quote, the faith is not the absence of fear. You're going to have fear. You're going to be fearful, right? There are emotions. Emotions are trying to tell us something, right? But faith is not the absence of fear. It's following God in the midst of fear and letting faith lead you. Living like the I am is with you. You're going to be fearful. You're going to be scared. but stepping out to find out, God, what do you want to do this next season? And for some of you, stepping out means just waking up with a little bit of faith tomorrow. For some of you, it's stepping out of a relationship. It's stepping in to serving. Where are you going to step out to find out what God wants to do? I'll lead you with this psalm that gives me great comfort. It's written by a man named David. David was a mighty warrior. Listen to what he says. He goes, when I am afraid, because I am going to be afraid. When I am afraid, what's he say? I will put my trust in you. Switching the volume of fear down, replacing it, the trust in God, is how we start to overcome fear. When I'm afraid, I put my trust in you. I'm believing you are with me in the valleys, in the mountaintops, wherever I go. Let's pray. God, we are so thankful, so thankful that you're a God that is with us in all of life. Father, that you're with us as we go, and we know we're going to be fearful. We know we're going to be afraid. Father, we may have anxiety or sadness or caution stepping in to this next step and stepping out to find out, God, but we're going to do it. We're going to live uncommon because we know that you're calling us to this. We're going to have faith that you're going to be with us. We may not have all the answers. We may not know what's next, but God, we're going to trust that you're with us, and we're going to listen to that soundtrack of you walking beside us. God, so we're going to praise you for the next several moments. The only king in this world to deserve praise and honor. We're going to stand in awe of what you're doing in our lives. We're going to learn to trust you a little bit at a time. In your name we pray. Amen.